Today's Wednesday, June 2nd, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, President Biden honors Tulsa race massacre survivors.
It included a neighborhood known as Black Wall Street. A white mob, assisted by an all-white police department, burned Greenwood to the ground.
Plus, Pope Francis makes sweeping changes to church law on sexual abuse crimes.
Sexual abuse of minors was previously an offense under the title. It has now been moved to offenses against human life, dignity and liberty.
Also, Belarus opposition calls for tougher sanctions on the government. Our top story today is in the U.S. President Joe Biden was in the southwestern state of Oklahoma Tuesday, becoming the first sitting U.S. president to commemorate the anniversary of the Tulsa race massacre. In 1921, white residents of the city attacked and destroyed a prosperous black community, leaving up to 300 people dead and thousands homeless. White House correspondent Patsy Widasguara has this report.
In 1921, Greenwood was a prosperous African-American community in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It included a neighborhood known as Black Wall Street. A white mob, assisted by an all-white police department, burned Greenwood to the ground, leaving hundreds of people dead and thousands homeless. A dark chapter in the nation's history that has been largely buried for decades. Tulsa resident Demetrius Williams.
Even people that are native to Tulsa didn't know about it until recently.
On Tuesday, President Joe Biden visited the Greenwood Cultural Center. He is the first U.S. president to commemorate the anniversary of the tragic event in Tulsa.
My fellow Americans, this was not a riot. This was a massacre.
He met with three survivors of the massacre, all over 100 years old.
You are the three known remaining survivors of a story seen in the mirror dimly, but no longer. Now your story will be known in full view.
While the national conversation has increasingly focused on the issue of systemic racism and Black Lives Matter, the Tulsa massacre was covered up for decades. Steve Phillips is founder of the political media organization Democracy in Color.
Records were actually removed from City Hall, removed from the library. They deliberately covered up that whole history. And then now you see a continued attempt to continue to whitewash the history of racism and white supremacy in this country.
In the centuries since the massacre, Black Americans continue to be discriminated against. According to government data, the typical white family has 8 times the wealth of the typical Black family, a gap that widened further during the pandemic. Biden announced steps to narrow the gap, including plans to invest tens of billions of dollars in disadvantaged communities, expand federal contracting with minority-owned businesses, and repeal 2 Trump-era rules that restrict fair housing practices. But he did not mention reparations, whether for the Tulsa massacre survivors or for the enslavement of African Americans. Robert Turner is the pastor of Vernon AME Church in Tulsa.
It's hypocritical for us to go out around the world and try to demand other countries treat their citizens right and to be fair and just when America has yet to be just and has yet to atone for her worst race mask in American history.
Biden's visit came at a time when many conservative states are pushing for new voting laws. Republicans say they want to reduce fraud, but Democrats say their real goal is to make it harder for blacks and other minorities to vote. Biden is appointing Vice President Kamala Harris to lead the administration's efforts on expanding voting rights. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
A ransomware attack that has disrupted meat production in North America and Australia originated from a criminal organization likely based in Russia, the meat processing company JBS says. Chris Dingham of Reuters reports.
The world's largest meat producer canceled shifts at its U.S. and Canadian meat plants on Tuesday after JBS said it was hit with a crippling cyber attack over the weekend that threatened to disrupt food supply chains and further inflate food prices. The White House announced on Tuesday that the attack was ransomware and that it originated from a criminal organization likely based in Russia. The White House also said it had contacted the Russian government about the attack, which is being investigated by the FBI, adding that it was, quote, delivering the message that responsible states do not harbor ransomware criminals. The attack, which JBS said it discovered on Sunday, comes less than a month after a ransomware attack on Colonial Pipeline, which the FBI says also originated from inside Russia, which crippled fuel delivery for several days in the U.S. southeast. Colonial, the country's largest fuel pipeline, acknowledged last week that it paid $4.4 million ransom to the hackers. JBS said it was working to resolve the incident, which caused the company's Australian operations to shut down on Monday and stopped livestock slaughter in JBS plants in several U.S. states. The attack also comes at a time of rising meat prices, and industry experts say it could push U.S. beef prices even higher by tightening supplies, just as summer grilling in the U.S. gets underway.
That's Chris Dingham of Reuters. Egypt's foreign ministry spokesman protested Tuesday after Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed indicated he was planning to build 100 small to medium-sized dams on the Blue Nile during the coming year. There is still no resolution to the ongoing conflict on filling the Renaissance Dam on the Blue Nile inside Ethiopian territory. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Egyptian media broadcast an angry statement by Foreign Ministry spokesman Ahmed Hafez criticizing Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's declaration about building 100 new small and medium-sized dams on waterways across his country during the next year. Hafez indicated the plan is a sign of Ethiopia's ill intentions regarding the conflict over filling the Renaissance Dam, which has caused the casus belli with both Egypt and neighboring Sudan. Hafez added that Ethiopia must coordinate such plans with its neighbors before causing them damage. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi visited Djibouti last week, insisting during a press conference he was still hoping to negotiate a diplomatic solution to the conflict with Ethiopia over filling the dam. Sisi says he discussed the Renaissance Dam situation, which affects the interest of the entire region, and the need for a fair and balanced agreement over filling and operating the dam as soon as possible. And Egypt's refusal of the effort of any party to impose its own plan that doesn't meet the interests or rights of countries whose interests are affected. Egyptian political sociologist Said Sadik tells VOA the issue of Ethiopia filling the Renaissance Dam for a second year starting in July has provoked the wrath of the Egyptian public.
Public opinion is very angry and is pushing the government to react to the provocation of Ethiopian politicians and media who are all the time speaking in a very provocative way against the Egyptian people and the Egyptian government.
Sadik went on to say that Egyptian opposition forces based mostly outside the country were calling for protests over what they claimed was the government's mishandling of the crisis. Sadik added that Egyptian officials were perplexed over the unwillingness of influential foreign power brokers like the European Union, the United States, and the African Union to use their influence to reach a diplomatic solution to the crisis. Paul Sullivan, a professor at the U.S. National Defense University in Washington, tells VOA that Ethiopia's construction of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam is inflaming enough, but building 100 more dams creates greater incitement and is an accelerating aggression. He goes on to stress that Egypt will need to respond, and if Ethiopia wants peace, they are giving indications of just the opposite. If this comes to war, he argues, all will lose, and massively. He says a reasonable settlement would be ideal, but that things seem to be going in the opposite direction. The Egyptian military has been conducting maneuvers with a number of regional countries in recent days, including Sudan, in order to show its readiness in the event a conflict erupts. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The Belarusian Democratic Opposition and some Western governments are calling for harsher sanctions against Alexander Lukashenko's government after the forced diversion of late May of an international airliner to arrest a Belarusian dissident blogger on board. Analysts warn if there is not a strong response, other authoritarian governments around the world might resort to the same tactic to arrest dissidents. VOA's Igor Chikanenka has more.
By forcing the civilian Ryanair flight to land in Belarus to arrest opposition blogger Roman Protasevich, the country's strongman Alexander Lukashenko enraged governments in Europe and across the Atlantic. European and American officials and lawmakers have denounced the action as a hijacking. Michael McCall is the top Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
A moral outrage, what happened. What he did with this state-sponsored hijacking has called more attention to himself from the, you know, our allies and our NATO allies. We could have additional sanctions. So that doesn't really put him in a good spot, and it puts more pressure.
But the incident also has sent chills among the Belarusian democratic activists, both at home and abroad.
Honestly, I am afraid. So I felt several times that someone is watching me, someone is following me, even here in Belarus.
Provoking fear is exactly what the Belarusian leader seems to have wanted, say analysts.
I think intimidation, a fear that they too could wind up in the same position as Protasevich.
To punish Lukashenko, Europe has severed its air connections with Belarus, and the United States said it will reimpose full blocking economic measures on 9 Belarusian state-owned enterprises, as well as sanction key members of the Belarusian regime. But more needs to be done, say some.
We need to see, I think, a much stronger response to this, because not just Lukashenko is watching this, Putin is watching it, Xi is watching it.
Lukashenko has been subject to Western sanctions before. What is needed now, according to democratic activists, is to strike at the country's most profitable industries.
There are three sectors which support the regime, which enable the regime: petrochemicals, wood, and steel.
Lukashenko's closest ally, Russia's Vladimir Putin, was quick to offer financial support to Belarus while accusing the West of hypocrisy.
There was a time when they landed the plane of the Bolivian president. They escorted the president out of the plane, and nothing, just silence.
U.S. lawmakers have little doubt Putin had a hand in the Ryanair incident.
It just raises some serious foreign policy concerns that I hope President Biden will raise with Putin when he meets with him.
The bilateral meeting between Biden and Putin will take place in Geneva on June 16th. Igor Tikhonenko, VOA News, Washington.
This is the Voice of America. The largest ship in the Iranian Navy caught fire and sank in the Gulf of Oman. The Fars and Tasnim News Agency said efforts Wednesday to save the support ship Karg failed. They report all of the crew escaped the fire. The Iranian government has not said what caused the fire. The vessel sank near the Iranian port city of Jask, about 1,270 kilometers southeast of Tehran on the Gulf of Oman, near the Strait of Hormuz. Indonesia's foreign minister is urging the Association of Southeast Asian Nations to appoint a special envoy of Myanmar in reaction to his military coup. Retno Marsudi reiterated a call for the safety of civilians as the ruling junta cracks down on opposition. The foreign minister says Indonesia is continuing to communicate with the Asian chair and other member countries following their demand for an immediate end to killings and the release of political detainees in Myanmar. You are listening to International Edition of the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The UN Refugee Agency warns a severe shortage of COVID-19 vaccines in the Asian Pacific region is putting the lives of refugees and asylum seekers at risk as this deadly disease continues to spread like wildfire throughout the region. Lisa Schneier reports for VOA from Geneva.
Countries in the Asia Pacific region host most of the world's 80 million forcibly displaced people. These countries have pledged to include refugees and asylum seekers into their COVID-19 vaccination programs. However, there are not enough vaccines to go around, so marginalized groups are among the last to benefit from these schemes. In the past 2 months, the World Health Organization has recorded some 38 million COVID-19 cases and more than 500,000 deaths in the Asia-Pacific region, the largest increase globally. The UN Refugee Agency reports refugees who live in overcrowded, unsanitary settings are especially vulnerable to the spread of COVID-19. UNHCR spokesman Andrei Mihajlovic says there has been a huge increase in the number of cases among Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, since April. He notes nearly 900,000 refugees are living in this densely populated camp, the largest in the world.
As of 31 May, there have been over 1,188 cases confirmed among the refugee population, with more than half of these cases recorded in May alone. We have also seen a worrying increase in the number of COVID-19 cases among refugees and asylum seekers in Nepal, Iran, Pakistan, Thailand, Malaysia, and Indonesia.
Even as much of the world appears to be recovering from the pandemic, aid agencies report fragile health systems in many countries in the region are struggling to cope with the recent surge of cases. They say help is needed to address the scarcity of hospital beds, oxygen supplies, and other essential health facilities and services. Mahajic says efforts are underway to mitigate the spread of the virus, but preventive measures must be bolstered with intensified vaccinations. He says some refugees, including in Nepal, have received their first vaccine dose with supplies provided by WHO's COVAX vaccination sharing facility.
Among the Rohingya refugees in camps in Bangladesh, not a single vaccine has been administered yet, given the scarcity of supplies in the country. The current delays in vaccine shipments brought about by limited supplies to COVAX mean that some of the world's most vulnerable people remain susceptible to the virus.
The UNHCR is appealing for equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines to save lives and curb the devastating impact of the virus in the Asia-Pacific region. It is urging the wealthier countries to donate surplus doses to COVAX for distribution in the poorer countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The World Health Organization has approved China's COVID-19 Sinovac-BioNTech vaccine for emergency use. Paula Bradley-Watson of Reuters reports.
The World Health Organization approved the emergency use of Sinovac's COVID-19 vaccine on Tuesday. It's the second Chinese vaccine to be given the green light by the WHO after Sinopharm last month. The emergency listing is a signal to national regulators of a product's safety and efficacy. Results showed that Sinovac prevented symptomatic disease in more than half of those vaccinated and prevented severe COVID-19 in 100% of the studied population. WHO Director Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus welcomed the vaccine's approval.
The easy storage requirements of CoronaVac make it very suitable for low-resource settings. It's now the eighth vaccine to receive EUL by WHO. It's now crucial to get these life-saving tools to the people that need them quickly.
The emergency listing allows for the vaccine to now be included in COVAX. That's a global program providing vaccines mainly to poor countries struggling with vaccine supplies. The WHO's endorsement is also a major boost for Sinovac after earlier data in clinical trials showed a wide range of efficacy rates. As of the end of May, Sinovac said it had already supplied more than 600 million doses of its vaccine at home and abroad. Many of the doses have gone to countries in Africa, Latin America, and Asia.
Flora Bradley-Watson of Reuters. Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine has been linked to a small number of heart inflammation cases in young men who received it, Israel's health ministry has said. Olivia Chan of Reuters reports.
There's a probable link between young men who received the second dose of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine and a heart inflammation condition. That's what Israeli health officials said Tuesday they'd observed from December to May. Pfizer has said it has not observed a higher rate of the condition, known as myocarditis, than it would normally be expected in the general population. In Israel, 275 cases of myocarditis were reported between December 2020 and May 2021, among more than 5 million vaccinated people, according to a study commissioned by the Health Ministry. Most patients who experience heart inflammation spent no more than 4 days in hospital, and 95% of the cases were also classified as mild. The study found the link between myocarditis and a Pfizer second dose was observed more among men aged 16 to 19 than in other age groups. Israel has now held off vaccinating its 12 to 15-year-old population. Pfizer said in a statement that it is aware of the Israeli observations of myocarditis, but it noted that no causal link to its vaccine has been established. Israel has been a world leader in its vaccination rollout. About 55% of its population has already been vaccinated.
That's Olivia Chan of Reuters. Pope Francis has made sweeping changes to Catholic Church law on sexual abuse crimes. The changes are aimed not only at punishing those in the church who commit such crimes, but also at making it harder for church officials to cover up offenses by priests. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Pope Francis has made a long-awaited and extensive revision of church law with specific attention to those who commit crimes related to sexual abuse. While abuse of minors was previously an offense under the title Crimes Against Special Obligations, it has now been moved to Offenses Against Human Life, Dignity and Liberty. Monsignor Filippo Iannone, head of the department charged with the project, explained the intention behind this change. The aim, he said, was to reaffirm the gravity of this crime and the attention that must be reserved for the victims. Since his election in 2013, Pope Francis has been speaking out against sexual abuse in the church and implementing changes aimed at bringing those responsible to justice. He has made great efforts at trying to bring more transparency and avoid cover-ups of those involved in abuse. Presenting the changes on Tuesday, Vatican officials said they will go into effect on December the 8th, the day the Church celebrates the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. The changes made to canon law recognize that both minors and adults can be victims of abuse. In addition, both clergy and lay people who hold church positions will have to answer for sexual offenses. While members of the church can be defrocked, lay people will pay for their offense either by losing their jobs or their place in their communities or will receive fines. New crimes have also entered the code, such as grooming minors or vulnerable adults for sexual abuse and possessing child pornography. The changes also make it much more difficult for abusers to benefit from superiors covering up, as this will no longer be tolerated, and those who do not act against offenders will be held responsible and punished for their negligence. Monsignor Iannone said there was the need to strengthen the criminal code because of some existing situations of irregularity in communities, but above all, as he put it, because of recent scandals with disconcerting and very serious episodes of pedophilia. He also said there has been a climate of excessive slack in the interpretation of penal law, where mercy was sometimes put before justice. La giustizia esige in questi casi che l'ordine violato venga ristabilito. Monsignor Iannone concluded by saying that justice requires that the order that has been violated be re-established, that victims be eventually compensated, and that offenders be punished and paid for their crimes. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
The Russian Parliament upper house has voted to withdraw from the Open Skies Treaty, which allows surveillance flights over military facilities. Wednesday's vote comes after U.S. officials told Moscow last month that President Joe Biden's administration had decided not to re-enter the Open Skies Treaty, which had allowed surveillance flights over military facilities before President Donald Trump withdrew from the pact. The legislation now goes to Russian President Vladimir Putin for signing. If Putin endorses the exit, it will take effect in 6 months. The 1992 Open Skies Treaty was intended to build trust between Russia and the West by allowing reconnaissance flights. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Lafio Yabaro, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedoko in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.
Your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international